Support for WVIK comes from Kathleen Collins at the Dragonfly in Bettendorf. Using both conventional and alternative counseling methods for empowerment to help create change for individuals and couples. More information is at KathleenCollinsCounseling.com.
You're listening to Heartland Politics with Robin Johnson, a presentation of WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Heartland Politics Show and podcast, which is aired on and distributed by WVIK, Quad Cities NPR. WVIK is the flagship public radio station in the Quad Cities region of northwestern Illinois and eastern Iowa. I'm your host, Robin Johnson, and today we're going to step away a little bit from what's going on in Washington and Des Moines and Springfield and talk about a topic that's near and dear to the hearts of many folks out in our listening area, and that's country music. So you might want to turn the volume up, stop what you're doing. I've got a very special guest on who you're going to recognize. He's a host of Country Countdown USA since its inception in 1992. He's a member of the Radio Hall of Fame, the Country Music Hall of Fame. He's also been the Country Music Association National Broadcast Personality of the Year 12 times, and he's a publisher of Country Air Check. Who is this person? He's Lon Helton, and most importantly, he's a graduate of Monmouth College, which, of course, listeners know I am as well. And Lon's going to be the commencement speaker Sunday, tomorrow, on campus. So if you're interested in hearing what he has to say, I'm sure it's going to be very good speech, inspirational speech. Come on down and see Lon. Lon, thank you so much for taking the time to be on today. So you started your career in Monmouth at a local station, and Galesburg, Chicago are some of the highlights in your career. And you're from the suburbs, as we talked about a little bit here before we got on air. What was there something that attracted you to country music? Was it just where your career progressed, or were you always did you always like that type of music?
No, you know, growing up on the south side of Chicago, I listened to WLS and WCFL, two of the greatest top 40 radio stations to ever exist in America. Yeah. My dad was from far south Illinois, Alton, Illinois, and he was a huge country fan. He played guitar, fiddle, banjo. He played just about everything that had a string. My mom played piano, a lot of country music in our house, most of which I didn't like whatsoever. And we argued over the radio all the time. And he taught me early on that he who drives controls the radio. So I listened to a lot of that, but radio was my passion. It was, I don't even think I realized it growing up. I used to pedal an ice cream cart down the streets of Chicago Heights for 8 hours a day and had a transistor radio taped to the top of the ice cream cart and listen to guys like Clark Weber and Joel Sebastian, Larry Lujack, Tommy Edwards, so many great Chicago disc jockeys. And I'm not even sure I understood at the time, but I was really, really in love with what they were doing. And I guess country music found me, much to my dad's delight at some point. When I worked in Monmouth, there wasn't a country station, but Galesburg, and I went over there, in late 1972, I worked on WGIL AM in the afternoon playing adult contemporary music. Then at night, I did 7 to midnight on the country station. And I think you almost have to be about 25 years old before you really understand country music. Life has to slap you around a little bit. And then you kind of go, ah, I know what these guys are singing about now. And then I think you gravitate to the artist stories because they're all hardworking people, pay their dues in clubs along the way, very few overnight successes. And then when I was in Galesburg, country music found me, I guess, because I got a job offer in Denver and at a country station in Denver. And in the radio world, moving from Galesburg, Illinois to Denver is almost unheard of. It's a real big leap. And I was very, very fortunate. And then I was in Colorado, and WMAQ in Chicago, which at the time was owned by NBC in 1975, was turning country. And through a series of miracles, I got a job offer there and went there. So by the time you work in major market country radio stations, you're kind of in country music. But I enjoyed the format. I enjoyed the people. Again, grew to love the music and have been lucky enough to make a career in it.
What led to the next step in your career, which looks like it had you ended up in right in Nashville, the heart of country music?
Well, I was in Los Angeles working at a country station, KHJ, that I was program director of. And like many AM radio stations in 1980, music just wasn't doing very well on AM. So they switched to a more of a talk format, and I was out of work. And got a job at a radio and music industry trade publication called Radio and Records. And I wrote about 3,000 words a week about country radio, what made country radio tick, how to program a country station, just everything country. And actually, I worked there for 23 years. Started there in 83, and in 86, we moved to Nashville, and I became the Nashville bureau chief when we opened up the Nashville office. And since 1984, I had done syndicated radio, usually centered around interviewing artists. I did a show called Country Close Up, one called Listen In. Again, I don't know that it was planned, but every show I did was centered around chatting with a country artist. And so I had the idea for that Country Countdown USA, which in essence is a three-hour show. We count down the top 30 country hits every week, play about seven other records. But unlike any other show on the radio, every week we have a country star come in, sit across from me without a script, and we kind of talk about their friends in the top 30. And again, kind of unheard of for a country syndicated show or any syndicated show. We've been on since 1992, which is a pretty long run for a radio show. But I think the magic of it is those artists being very real and talking about, not talking about themselves as most interviews go. They were talking about, they talk about their friends in the top 30, and they tell stories that I've never heard before. And I hear a lot of stories. So that show could only work if you're in Nashville to have access to those country artists every week. So the two really tied hand in hand. And I think that, one of the things we do that I did at Radio and Records, and one of the things I do now with Country Air Check that we started in 2006, is we do the top 50 country songs every week. We compile a chart. Basically, we get information on music airplay from 160 country stations from around the USA, and we compile that using a little formula based on a station's audience. We come up with the top 50 songs. You see those in USA Today every Tuesday. They print the top songs in the USA for different formats, and that's our compilation. So we have to be in Nashville to do all those things. I think it just makes a lot of sense. Nashville is an easier place to live than LA. Nashville is a lot better place probably to raise kids than LA. So being in Nashville has been really great. I've been here since 86.
Well, it's, yeah, I've been to Nashville, and I hear it's just been booming since I was there. I think I was there about 10 years ago.
Well, I will tell you, Robin, that a couple of months ago, we went to a dinner here in town where the mayor spoke, and he said that 80% of Nashville's skyline has been built in the last 10 years.
Wow. Yeah. There was a lot of construction right in the area where we were staying downtown. We were just a couple blocks from Broadway. And I remember that. A lot of cranes, a lot of work going on. So it's a great place to go for a vacation. We did both Nashville and Memphis, of course, and got to see a lot of the Elvis stuff and some of the old roots of country music and music overall.
Two very, very different cities, right?
Yeah. Now, oh, yeah.
As you know, river cities are very different than cities away from the river. I mean, they're just very different. And Memphis, of course, home of really rhythm and blues, the Stax record label, the Volt record label, so many great songs came out of there. Sam Phillips and his Sun Records, where he produced Elvis and Johnny Cash, Carl Perkins, really incredible.
I stood in that room where that iconic picture was taken. They still have that. And I stood in that room and you could just feel the goosebumps, the history reaching out and grabbing you. What impact throughout your career, Lon, have you seen, the change in the internet and social media and all, and the fact that you're still working radio and the staying power with that's really impressive when I consider all the changes that have taken place. Because the audiences are so fractured now. But yet it seems like there's still a loyal following a lot for in this particular genre of music, country music.
Probably stronger in country than almost anywhere else. And that makes sense because probably country's demo being a little older than everybody else, they were probably a little slower to embrace cassettes, probably a little slower to embrace CDs, and they still kind of hang on to radio. Maybe more than other formats, because young people tend to, especially when it comes to music discovery, which I think for people of certain generations, mainly ours and before, radio was music discovery for us. You would hear it on the radio and talk about it with your friends. That's all we had access to, really. Now you're right. There's so many platforms for music discovery. And probably the major difference is, even with podcasts, people want what they want when they want it, and they know where to go get it. Radio is more, here's what I'm giving you, and take it, right? I mean, you even see it with videos. You know, MTV and country music television, CMT, were built on running videos. And as the public gained access to seeing the video they wanted to see whenever they wanted. MTV doesn't run videos hardly anymore. CMT doesn't. It's old TV shows, reality shows, etc. So, yeah, the access people have to music really changes everything, especially music discovery.
You're listening to Heartland Politics on WVIK Quad Cities NPR. This is your host, Robin Johnson, and I'm delighted to have as my guest today Lon Helton, who is the host of Country Countdown USA. Just a living legend he's been described as, and I think that's true. And in learning more about him, he's a Monmouth College grad, which his listeners know I am as well, very proudly. And he's going to be giving the commencement address this Sunday, tomorrow, on campus. So I encourage you to go down and listen to what he has to say. We've been talking a little bit about his background, how we got into radio, country music, and where he's at in his career now. I've got to ask you this. I had Bill C. Malone on several years back, who wrote a great book called Country Music USA. And I remember asking him this because when I went to Nashville, I went to the Ryman Auditorium, and I'll never forget this. It was an older gentleman. He had to be 75 or 80. And he was showing us all around, and went into the dressing rooms. And he made a point of saying, of course, a lot of people don't feel this is country music nowadays. And I'm one of them. The real country music was years ago. And I'll never forget that, because I do think people associate country music with going back to Johnny Cash, or even before him, some of the stars, Hank Williams. But yet it is different now in the music anyway. Have you heard this debate or this discussion, and what are your thoughts on that?
Well, it's always fascinated me, because I don't hear any young people today saying rock and roll top 40 radio should be the Beatles. It should sound like Green's Clearwater Revival. It should sound. Why isn't it? I'm sorry. Why isn't it that way? It should sound, you know, they don't say that. But we expect our country music to sound like George Jones and Merle Haggard, and it just doesn't make any sense to me. I would say that the reason is an artist is an amalgam of their influences. So Garth Brooks talks a lot about him being a product, if you will, of Bob Seger, James Taylor, George Jones, and George Strait. So that's going to make him different than all the artists before him. George Jones or Johnny Cash might have said they were products of Hank Sr. and Kitty Wells and Patsy Cline and Ray Price. So that made them different than the group of artists before them. The next generation of artists in any format are always different than the ones who came before, because their influences were different than the ones who came before. So in music goes through cycles, it goes through phases. Country in particular, to delve into your world a hair, you know, country music seems to thrive when there's a little adversity in the U.S. or in the world, as people go kind of back to basics, back to roots, as they seek a comfort in, as they seek a comfort in familiarity, I guess, or people with a shared experience or the common feelings. And when you listen to country music, that's what you get. You get you get as much as any format. We are really in touch with the listeners and their lives and what they're experiencing, what they're living right now. So in times of turmoil or unknown, country music tends to do really well, which we are right now. Country music is also a huge tent. I mean, right now it's a long way from a Shaboozy song to a John Party song, and both have hits, and there are a lot in the middle. You see Beyonce doing her country album and Post Malone doing his country album. So we're a very, very wide tent, and we're also, you know, deep on both ends. So it really is just, I think the music, you know, the reason it doesn't get as much attention, maybe back to your point when we started this, it's that music between the Hudson River and LA that nobody except most of America seems to enjoy. And when the media centers are on the coasts, perhaps we don't get the respect or the, you know, the props that we deserve for being, again, the music of America, really. I mean, yeah. There are 10,000 commercial radio stations in the U.S. More than 2,000 of them are country. Fully 20% of the radio stations in America are country.
I found that out too, and that in my the work I do in opinion research and political campaigns, there have been times when we asked, this has been big cities, suburbs, everywhere, we would ask people what their favorite music is. And some of the people I worked for were shocked when it came back and country music was either number one or two. And it didn't matter where it was. It was in the city, suburb, rural areas where people associate country music with rural. It's so much more than that. And I think it's because of what you said earlier. They tell stories about life. And in a way, I think that's relatable for folks.
Very much. Very much.
Well, I wanted also to touch on the P word, politics. This is a politics show. But everything immediately in this day and age, as you know, as someone in media, comments are immediately broken down into each side. And how do you approach that as somebody, an interviewer? I mean, my format's different than yours in a way, but how do you, what's your thoughts on that in this political era? Where do you dive right into it? Do you kind of wait and kind of adjust a question perhaps to something somebody said? Or what are your thoughts on that?
It's interesting. Unlike so many actors and actresses, and maybe some in the pop world, for whatever reason, country artists are a little reticent to wade into politics. possibly because of the day and age, everything, it seems like no matter what the question is, it's the populace is split 50-50. That 50% of the people like what you just said and 50% hate it. It's funny. Jason Aldean was just on the countdown. Actually, I think it airs this weekend. And I said to him, man, I haven't seen you, but I saw you on TV. I saw you sitting next to Donald Trump a year ago at the, last summer at the Republican National Committee. And then we started talking about President Trump and how they played golf at Mar-a-Lago, and they were invited down on New Year's Eve, not to perform, but just as guests at dinner. And so he was very open about it. He said, yeah, he said, I've got, President Trump texts me. He said, although he's not much of a texter, he calls. He'll just call out of the blue. And it's and it's pretty wild, actually, to think that the President of the United States is calling a country singer just to chat. But I think these guys, they do have their pulse on America. Country artists probably play more dates per year than most pop artists. They're playing, anywhere from 80 to some maybe 150 or 200. So they're out with the fans, and they're at the county fairs and the state fairs, and they're talking to people, and they have their finger on the pulse. So some will go there, some you don't. I don't know. I don't know anymore what, I don't know. Like I say, it's 50-50. I don't know what you gain. You just make half the people mad and half the people agree with you. And you're never sure what half, because the half changes depending on what your subject is.
Well, remember Oliver Anthony's song, Richmond, North of Richmond. I remember at first the left loved it, but then when they really got into the second or third verses, they're, maybe we don't like this. It's just, and then it's all blown up politically, but it's just the age we live in that we have to navigate, I guess.
Well, it's interesting. That song, you talked earlier about platforms and the internet. That song was a giant hit with people on social media and, the number of views it got, but it was not a country radio hit. It was hardly played on country radio. I think, there's some feeling too that I get enough of this all day, every day. And so maybe if I turn on the radio for music, I'm looking for a little bit of a break from politics.
Amen to that. And that's what we're doing today on this show a little bit, but then again, music is culture, and culture impacts politics. And I think you've already described here the impact country music has on our country. And it's not just, again, the fallacy, the misperception, it's rural areas, it's all over. I got time for two more questions here. I want to get to that, but you've interviewed just everybody, probably, Garth Brooks, Shania Twain. I'm not going to read the whole list. George Strait. I found one where you interviewed Waylon Jennings. That goes back to my era. Was there any one that stands out? They said anything interesting, or your top interviews that you cherish the most? Is that?
I don't know. I mean, these are fascinating people who lead interesting lives, and if you get a bad interview, it's your fault, not theirs, because by virtue of their celebrity, they get to do some pretty interesting things. They get to see and meet some pretty amazing people and travel the world and see things. And they're all pretty unique characters, by and large, and they're just fascinating to talk to and hear their story. Waylon was not the gruff guy that he comes across as. He was really just a great guy to sit down and talk to. So I don't know, they're all different. I've been lucky enough probably since the early 80s to talk to every country singer that ever had at least a top five record. And if there have been 300 of them, there are 300 different stories about how they got to Nashville or how they became stars. One of the cores is songwriting, certainly telling their unique story. And as you said, that's what country is. It's lyric oriented songs with adult themes, and that's what they're best at.
We just have a couple minutes left. I want to end up my interview today with Lon Helton, and I'm so glad you took the time. Tomorrow, you're going to be addressing some graduates. It's really uncertain times in a lot of ways, perhaps more different than when we graduated. I graduated in 1980. What can you give kind of a teaser here on what your themes, messages might be to this group of graduates?
Well, I would say you probably had calm times. I graduated in 1972. We did not finish classes in the spring of 71 because of the protests after Kent State. And I mean, classes shut down like maybe 2 weeks, I think, before finals or something like that. So college campuses in the late 60s, early 70s were very roiled, very political, very obviously anti-war. It was a very strange time. As I talked to Maynard's son about and his buddies about that time and the draft and how we went from deferments to the lottery system, that is lost on many young people. But it was so much a part of our lives. It controlled, it dictated your future. And I don't know, that's maybe, I hadn't planned to get there with this, but my thoughts to these guys tomorrow, which by the way, it is terrifying to be asked to speak to people who are closer in age to your granddaughter than to you. And what they're thinking. And we hear all the stories about Gen Zers and their predilections and the way they think about things. But I think what I'm going to try to convince them to do is embrace the journey, not focus on a destination, because that's kind of mythical. What is the old line? Man plans and God laughs. Yeah. You really can't plan. And what you have to do is embrace the journey. You have to keep your eyes open as it takes you through that broken road of life, so that you can take advantage of opportunities that you didn't even expect to pop up in your wildest dreams. And so I'm going to punctuate it with some lyrics from country songs that kind of speak to that. There's a song that Richard Lee and Susanna Clark wrote in the late 80s, actually, that among the lyrics are, you know, I should have to look them up, but sing like no one's listening and dance like no one's watching. Make sure your life comes from the heart. That kind of thing.
Well, that'll be an interesting speech. We're all going to be looking forward to that. Lon Helton's been my guest today on Heartland Politics. Kind of a different take, not directly political, but talking about country music. Radio, of course, his commencement speech tomorrow at Monmouth College. If you're interested, about noon, head down there. Lon, thank you so much for taking the time to be on today, and good luck tomorrow.
My pleasure. Thanks very much. And I'm going to need it. It's still terrifying. You know, as we speak, we're about 3 days out, and I'm still putting tweaks on the remarks. So
right until before.
I'm sure you know how it goes. It sounds great when you write it, and then 3 days later you read it and you go, oh man, that's awful. That's not funny.
Well, thank you again.
My pleasure. Thank you, Robin. I appreciate it so much.
You've been listening to Heartland Politics with Robin Johnson, a presentation of WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR. You can follow Heartland Politics at WVIK.org or wherever you subscribe to podcasts.